The Bernstein and Holmes Show.
Trying to figure out what the hell did MJ do? I mean, how did he win? How did he become so dominant?
I hope he doesn't think he has to become a psychopath to have what he described as competitive stamina.
It doesn't seem like that's his stilo. You'd be foolish to think that that guy's not ultra competitive, but he didn't seem to need to be as maniacal.
I hope Tim Grover tells him the unvarnished truth. You want to really know what Mike did?
Well,
wake up, play 36 holes of golf, come back, you're going to have a huge steak early dinner.
Steak dinner, boom.
Big old steak.
Then you're going to go play. Then you'll have, I don't know, half a bottle of bourbon and gamble until 3 in the morning.
Go get it, baby.
ChicagoTribune.com, big thanks to them for allowing us to play that. They did not have to do that. AK is good people. It's the only AK I recognize. Amanda Kashubi. That's it.
This group is really good.
Well, you better make it good, fella.
Do you recognize the state of Alaska?
No.
There are only 49 stars on that flag.
I'll be deep in the cold, cold ground before I recognize Missouri.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 a.m. till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. It's a hot one. It's hot. Look after your elderly relatives. Open your windows. My God, I made the mistake of trying to go fishing yesterday for about 4 hours, and I was an absolute wreck by the time I was done.
You could have stopped at any point,
man. I know, but you know, it's not what you do because you think, ooh, maybe there's one over there.
We got weights and fish.
Maybe if I go over there, then because you keep thinking the next spot is better, and the next thing you know, the sun's going down and you have to go home. But it was
But even when the sun went down, yeah, it was 92 degrees.
It was hot, and I lost a lot of water weight, and But there was no one else out there, so that was kind of nice. I had the lakefront to myself.
Yeah, it's actually really nice. Like, that was one of the things I thought about when we were getting ready to come home from Vegas. I was like, we left and came back at the perfect time. Like, right in the middle of the DNC, we left. And then everyone was gone when we got back. And we get to finally reclaim the city for like a week and a half.
Yeah, although traffic is now with CPS back, we have to contend with the people making right turns, dealing with all the pedestrians who are headed to school and back from school in the afternoon. So we just got to be wary of that. But everything's all good with that. Everything's all good. We've got Ray Diaz, Adam Studzinski, Brandon Fryer, Connor O'Donnell, Kevin Lapka doing their things. We're going to have Ian Happ join us at 11:25, high noon, 11:40. Brian Baldinger at noon, Kalen Kaler in studio at 1, and we also have a giveaway. We have another pair of tickets to our live show at Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigleyville, 10 to 2, Tuesday, September 17th. Justin Steele is going to come hang out. It's all brought to you by Bosch Power Tools and Phillips Chevrolet. So be listening for the cue to call for your chance to win.
Chicken strips.
Oh, for sure. It is cut down day.
It is.
And there's already been a lot of moves made. You see, the Giants waived Allen Robinson.
I thought that he was 33, but he's only 31.
Because wide receivers can age fast.
Yeah, it can happen very quickly.
Keenan Allen's 32.
I mean, that's a reason why you didn't say our wide receiver position is totally fine. You go ahead and you draft a wide receiver with that 9th pick. Because it can happen. And because, look, Keenan Allen's probably only here for a year anyway. So you go and you get Rome Odunze. That makes a lot of sense. Thinking about it from the perspective of the lifespan of wide receivers and how quickly it can go downhill. With Allen Robinson, man, it just, I don't know. Like, he was great. Then he was unhappy. Then he was bad. Then he was disinterested. And then he left. And then he left again. And it makes me really sad because I feel like there was more player in there than he got out of his career.
Well, I know he had one fantastic year here, and then he kind of seemed to lose interest. And it was obvious in his play. So, I don't know. Was it physical? Was it mental? Was it just kind of over? I don't know if he's going to land with another team. If somebody's going to give him another shot, maybe he gets a little dead cat bounce at the end of a career. Some guys do, if they're healthy. We'll see.
Had 1,147 yards with the Bears, and then so 2 good years with the Bears. Then 1,250 yards with the Bears, And then things just kind of fell apart.
Mm-hmm. The Bears also waived our guy Colin Johnson, but they are apparently trying to get him back to the practice squad if he clears waivers. That is their intention, to bring him back. I wouldn't be surprised if another team takes a look.
I mean, he's been on other teams before. Like, this is a legitimate pro wide receiver and someone you would want in your locker room.
So we're going to keep you apprised of everything that is going on there. And we're also going to get you ready for the rollicking next episode of Hard Knocks tonight.
Yeah. I actually, we disagree about episode three. I thought episode three was pretty good. I do not have high hopes for episode four. Because we're very far away from the last time Caleb Williams played football.
Mm-hmm.
And there really hasn't been a lot going on.
We're all going back to the ice cream museum, aren't we?
Well, I don't know if it's ice cream museum that ends up happening, but I'm trying to figure out.
Offensive line coach Chris Morgan also likes ice cream, and so does his family.
Yeah, this feels like it could be one of those more featurey. Because think about it, Dan. Like,
I know.
What is there to do?
Nothing.
And it's weird. Maybe now you get the Colin Johnson portion of the show.
Well, we'll discuss later. I hadn't heard of many of the guys the Bears actually announced that they waived.
You had heard of Ja'Tyre Carter, though.
Yes. But had you heard of Jerome Carvin?
Schmarvin Vinden?
Michael Dwumfor?
See, this deserves.
Now he's definitely Dwumfor.
This deserves the hockey organ.
Yes, it really does. They've also waived wide receiver Peter LeBlanc, also known as Pete the White or of the White.
Pete yes.
of White. If you're a wide receiver and your name has anything in it that reminds anyone of White, you're cut.
That's not right.
No, that's the first thing they saw.
Not Des White.
Nope, cut. Defensive lineman Jalen Hutchings, cut.
Okay.
These are like video game names, and they didn't have the rights to other names.
Sure.
Wide receiver John Jackson. This guy I've heard of. Defensive back Quindell Johnson. They signed him at one point during a season when he was on another team.
Yes.
Right?
Lee Oz Maxwell Jillions. He's Carolina University.
And linebacker Javon White. Cut.
You don't have one for that one, Studs? You got a key and peel for that?
Ibrahim Moizus, University of Tennessee at Chattanooga.
Cut. Yeah, this is the stage of cutdowns where it's all people you've never heard of.
Ozzie Taz, Buckshank, Stanford University.
Well, they have to get down to, as Dan Wiederer, I think, correctly pointed out yesterday, the initial 53-man roster.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't necessarily the group that you're going to go to war with in week one.
San Diego State University.
Well, we'll see. I don't know what they're going to do with the defensive backfield. There's going to be a couple really good players they're going to have to let go from the defensive backfield, and whether or not they're able to retain them.
Like my guy, Reddy Stewart.
I think Reddy Stewart and Greg Stroman are probably on the outside looking in, right?
And I think those are two guys that can play, but that shows you the amount of depth that the Bears defensive backfield has. That guys like that, they really have shown you something. And Stroman, you know, has shown you all sorts of stuff, but you might have to let them go. There are other position groups where I feel like, ugh, that you might have to carry more guys because you got all sorts of problems.
Well, Brad Biggs says, it sounds like the Bears could be planning to have three players start on short season IR.
Yep.
Two can be designated before cuts to 53. And he said, nothing official. Keep an eye out for long snapper Patrick Scales starting the season on injured reserve. Yeah, that's not good.
It's something to not feel comfortable about for sure when that operation is very new. When you're talking about field goal, because you have a new holder as well. So now you're adding a a new long snapper for the first 4 weeks of the season. Not great.
No.
I felt like Torrey Taylor did a good job handling the bad snaps, though.
I think so, too. Torrey Taylor also strangely didn't play in the last preseason game.
He held. He held.
He did help. Didn't punt, which was weird. Like, get some kicks.
I'm confident. I think he's fine. Yeah, I think he's fine.
Is he going to know his way to the stadium?
Well, he did a practice run, so I think, you know,
he's got it down.
Riveting. Maybe today, Torrey Taylor goes to 7-Eleven.
Nice ride, though.
To get milk.
They should have done a bit where he tries to take lower Wacker. Like, if you're going to do that, make it a whole bit, you know? Like, try to get the kid on lower Wacker and see what happens.
And play Blues Brothers music and have him with the... He's starting a thing. He says, you know, I got half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark. We're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Like, yeah, I'm not trying to tell them how to do their jobs, but...
I mean, you could make it work. Take lower Wacker all the way to the end.
Uh-huh.
And then head east to the lakefront, and then you're there. Mm-hmm. Especially on a Saturday morning. Got nothing going on.
It's already better than last week's episode. Already. 630 says, watching Hard Knocks is starting to feel like homework.
That's what we were talking about in the meeting this morning.
Yes.
We have to watch it because that's what we do. But yeah, I hope that there's going to be awesome stuff in tonight's episode, but I'm not sure how.
The Raiders are releasing the Peterman.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are.
They're going to sign him back, though.
I guess they are. Luke Getsy's got his Peterman. Got to have him there.
You can't, first of all, you can never get rid of the Peterman.
Uh-uh. That guy stays in the league as long as he wants. You know what? He might end up being the new Chase Daniel.
The Peterman?
Don't you disrespect Chase Daniel.
That's disrespectful.
And actually, Chase would tell me that, too. He'd be like, no. Put some respect on my name. There's only one me.
I feel like Nathan Peterman has maybe played more games.
I think that sounds right.
Also, Nathan Peterman has currently $7.4 million in career earnings. So he's got quite a ways to go.
He's got a long way to go.
He was fighting uphill because Chase was a first-round pick. So you already have that, you know, money right there. But, yeah.
I forgot Chase Daniel was a first-round pick.
Yeah, man. That's how you get started on that great career, and then you just kind of stick around. No, he hasn't played more games than Chase Daniel.
Okay.
So there's still a chance for him to be Chase Daniel, but probably not.
By the way,
I take that back. What? I think they have started the same amount of games.
There it is.
Five.
Shout out to Twitter guy Westloop Tom, who actually came up to me while I was fishing and said hello. It was very nice.
Because
sometimes you get scared because if some guy's like, hey, I'm that guy who is a meme or the thing, and you're like, okay.
Great.
No, he seemed very normal.
What's your real name?
Right? Yeah. But like those people.
I wasn't aware West Loop Tom was allowed outside of West Loop.
I guess he is. Yeah.
What's the point of the name then?
Maybe he lives in the West Loop.
He's the representative, like the delegate for the West Loop.
He represents a constituency. But no, very nice. Because you're always a little like, oh, okay, this is...
He's got the ankle monitor, so, you know, he can't go too far.
He's got the score ankle monitor.
He can't go too far from the West Loop.
Who installs the score ankle monitor?
Porth. I love that.
Y'all get over here.
Y'all get over here. We're gonna just put this right on your ankle.
Got a little present for you. This is, we're just going to put this on here. Someone suggested that on Hard Knocks, they're going to go to the Rainbow Cone Museum.
That would be great.
But it's all voiced by an animatronic Farmio.
Look, if they went to...
I think Farmio might have been an animatronic Farmio, actually.
I actually really like the idea of them going to Rainbow Cone.
But you walk in and start going, I can't believe you haven't been to Rainbow Cone. Why haven't you been to the Rainbow Cone Museum yet?
You're getting
Rainbow Cone right now. Welcome to the Rainbow Cone Museum. You should have come here a long time ago.
It's very far from where the Bears do their thing, so...
When I was going to the bachelor party that I went to, when I was out for that week, we drove by in Southwest Michigan a rainbow cone, And I wanted so bad to do the Farmio thing, but nobody in the car was going to understand what I was doing.
Oh, that's the best time to do it.
I'm like sitting there in my own head, like, rainbow cone. Everyone, we got to get rainbow cone. It's rainbow cones right here. But I kept it internal.
That was like the talk I gave Jason about when you go to college, nobody's going to understand why Ice Machine is funny. So I said, nobody's going to get it. You're going to be in the middle of a party, and suddenly you're going to make that joke. You're like, this kid's weird.
That's why I resisted. Even though everyone I was with are all good friends, right. I would have had to explain the whole,
right. You're not there trying to establish yourself socially. Yes.
Texters, you're right. I've mixed up my Missouri quarterbacks. You're right. Chase was a UDFA, so him making $50 million is amazing. I was thinking of Blaine Gabbert.
Yes, Blaine Gabbert, I know, was a first-round pick.
Wasn't he on the cover of the Sports Illustrated? Now I'm just all mixed up. But wasn't he on the cover of the Sports Illustrated with Cam Newton? Who was on the – there were, a bunch of quarterbacks. It was like, which one of these guys is going to be the first pick in the draft?
For some reason, I thought Chase Daniel got his own cover. And maybe that's an outrageous thought.
I think Chase Daniel had a cover of, ESPN magazine.
That's
got to
be it. That's got to be it.
Now I got to see
Blaine Gabbert was the 10th overall pick in the draft.
That's wild. Where was Christian Ponder taken? Wasn't he up there too?
I think 13th.
Next pick, 12th.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my God. Listen, look at this. Okay.
Oh, we're all going to throw up, aren't we?
Jags took Blaine Gabbert at 10. The Texans took J.J. Watt at 11. Ugh.
I was right about this. So I get one thing right today. On the cover of Sports Illustrated on their draft preview, it has Cam Newton and Blaine Gabbert and Jake Locker with the headline, "You Choose."
No, thank you.
Jake Locker, the 8th overall pick in that draft to the Titans.
And drafted in baseball, too, right? I think that was his whole thing, is that he was an actual really good baseball player that just kind of found his way to playing football.
Top 10 of that draft was actually pretty good until you get to Jake Locker.
Give me the top 10.
Cam Newton, number one.
He was really good.
Von Miller, number two.
Real good.
Marcel Darius to the Bills. Not familiar.
Decent player.
AJ Green to the Bengals.
Very good player.
Patrick Peterson to the Cardinals.
That'll work.
Julio Jones to the Falcons.
That's fantastic.
Alden Smith to the 49ers.
Good player.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at his peak, unblockable.
Jake Locker to the Titans. Mm-hmm. Woof. Tyron Smith to the Cowboys.
Very good.
Blaine Gabbert to the Jags.
Yeah.
J.J. Watt to the Texans. Then Christian Ponder to the Vikings.
Brad Biggs has just tweeted, the Bears are releasing veteran offensive tackle Jacob Curran, who has starting experience, 29 games and 9 starts in Seattle. That may mean that Kieran Amagaje is healthier than we think. Right?
Well, he better be, because if not, then that's a guy that could have stayed on PUP. He better be ready to roll week one, because you're going to, I think.
Didn't you say you thought he'd just be inactive?
Yes, but I think you might. I think they activated him because they need bodies.
All right. This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago. When we come back, I know Dave Wannstedt was talking about what he expects is going to happen with the new kickoff rule.
Yeah, with me.
And, that's right, that was with you. Because I know he was also on with Ryan Haw this morning.
Yeah, this is from last night on my last football night in Chicago. So, Wani and I got to talking special teams and stuff. So, he echoed something that I had been hearing about the kickoff rule. So, we will share it, and we'll talk about it, and we'll talk a little bit about other NFL stuff, like, what's Jerry Jones doing?
Yeah, it's weird. And what is he asking of fans?
Yeah, and does it match anything that Chicago fans have had to deal with? We'll explain next here on The Score.
X Wayne at Aliciousness, Missouri Western State University.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The Score, score, score.
And 670thescore.com. An Odyssey Station.
There's a lot of strategy
that hasn't played out to the public yet and probably is not going to play out until the season. Right now, most teams are trying to get an evaluation on guys. So you're going to see a lot of man-on-man returns, like mano-a-mano, one-on-one, to get a good evaluation to see if a guy can block a guy in space and see if a guy can, you know, disengage off a block and go make a tackle. So it's going to be very vanilla, and there's a lot that hasn't played out to the public yet, but it's a very competitive and strategic play, I think, that's going to help the game for sure.
Bears special teams coordinator Richard Hightower. We should put him on a list. Ray, put Richard Hightower on the list.
He is on the list.
All right, good.
And Stud says John Hoke, too. He wants to hear from John Hoke.
All right.
We're putting them all on the list.
Sure.
Dan, who do you want on the list, Dan?
Shane Waldron.
Yeah, Shane Waldron.
All right.
What Shane he said. Waldron. Put him on the list.
Put him on the list. But yes, that was Richard Hightower talking about the kickoff rule, the things they saw in the preseason, and what they expect to see in the regular season. Last night, I hosted Football Night in Chicago for the last time, as the network will be ceasing football programming at the end of the week. So this is really sad.
A quick note, Brett Rippon has been cut. I imagine they will attempt to re-sign him to the practice squad.
It was very Castellanos of you.
Sorry.
Right? Dan Castellanos over here.
I don't know how bittersweet it is to have, and I don't even know what new programming is going to be in the new thing.
I'm curious on what that is because they won't start. The Bear season will be a month old by the time the new network takes over. And I think their focus right now is probably making sure you can get the Bulls and the Blackhawks on the air.
That's fine, but you cannot be a sports network of any repute in this city without football programming.
I agree. I think they need football programming, and I think that without a football after show, there is a vacuum. I've heard some things that might help out in that regard, but nothing concrete. So yeah, it's going to be weird. Like Haw's doing his last couple of football night in Chicago's this weekend, and that's it. Like, that's the end of football coverage at NBC Sports Chicago, which sucks. But my guy Anthony DeRunda, who's an incredible producer, who I believe is going to the new place, but he said to me, he's like, what do you want to do for the last show? And I was like, I gotta have Wani, because Dave and I did all sorts of shows together, like in the last 7 years. Even the Dave Wants That Show, I was the host of the Dave Wanstead Show. And so we talked about a lot. Like, I played the Aaron Donald video for him, the Shady McCoy.
The race? Yeah.
Aaron, because he coached both of them.
Yep.
So he gave his thoughts on all of that. But then I was like, look, Dave, you made your bones as a special teams coordinator. What do you think now that you've seen 4 weeks of the new kickoff?
I don't think we're going to see the ball being return much, to be honest with you. I think when it's for real, I think the average return was somewhere around the 30-yard line for the whole preseason. And you know what? All these coaches were saying, okay, we got young players in there. We want to see if anybody will block. We want to see if anybody will tackle. So let's return the kicks. When it's for real here next week, I would not be shocked if you see teams kicking the ball out of the end zone and say, you know what, go ahead, start the drive on the 30-yard line, that's fine. You know, the owners' meeting's coming up. Keep an eye on this. I think next week, Lawrence, the owners have a meeting someplace, NFL owners. Don't be surprised at that meeting if they don't say, we're moving up. If you kick it out of the end zone, we are going to move the ball, give the offense the ball at the 35. That would change things around a little bit from a defensive standpoint, you know, kicking the ball and trying to pin them down in there. So I'm not excited about it because I just think it's too easy to kick it out and give them the ball at the 30 and let's go play.
So Dave is now the second person that I've talked to that has said, you know, that kickoff rule, it's going to be tweaked.
He wouldn't be saying that if he didn't know something. He wouldn't just be sort of idly speculating. It's clear that there is a groundswell in the coaching community that is echoing that thought.
There's a lot of people that don't like
it.
Yeah, like, fine, we'll just do the thing where we kick it off. But the idea of penalizing that is kind of interesting. The idea of, oh, that's your approach? Fine. Offense gets it at 35.
Put it at the 40. How bad do you want it?
Make it like the kick out of bounds.
How bad do you want to put it? Say, call that out of bounds.
It is technically out of bounds.
Say out of bounds is out of bounds.
So you kick it out of bounds, it's ball at the 40.
Or,
I mean, that's what they do if it's short of the 20. That's what happened in the last Bears game. The ball was short of the 20, so the 40-yard line.
Yeah.
So why not do the same thing on the other
side? Why half-ass it? Why make it 35 when 40 is perfectly reasonable? Or if you really want to have some fun, you bring out the arena nets.
Have it bounce off?
Uh-huh.
Get Rashid Davis out there?
Yeah. Like if you put it through the uprights, there could be something going. Or depending on, you just make it a more interesting play, but let it put some temporary net up for every kickoff, and boing, off it comes, and it's in play. Yeah. Like, there's all kinds of things you could do. But I would say just go to the 40. Either if in play or not in play. And over in play, inside the 20 or not.
Well, why don't we talk about one of Dave's former bosses?
Yeah, I've heard two people now. I heard Mike Florio coming in dismissing pretty much anything the Cowboys do with this blanket assessment of Jerry Jones. And it was Sam Munson who told us this stuff yesterday, too, that you can't look at Jerry Jones' decision through a normal lens because people say, oh, he loves controversy. He loves attention. He's building the brand of this entertainment out there more so than anything else. That's what's important to him because it helps his overall Forbes franchise value. So I'm thinking about that. If that is really true, if you're a Cowboy fan, what are you rooting for? It's really hard to root for an entertainment brand.
Well, they signed CeeDee Lamb.
But what was fascinating was I read an analysis of this saying the fact that Jerry Jones drags out contract negotiations because he likes to be the center of attention and the drama, it's Trumpian in a way. And it like likes to have these warring factions and have everybody talking about it, and then will overpay at the top of the market because he waited up until the last moment where an intelligent football team
save some money by getting the deal done earlier,
and you avoid all of the conflict with the player. I mean, there's people involved here. Your relationship with the agent, your relationship with the player. Yeah, they can get every last dollar, but if you say, hey, we're making you this offer right now, and we can do this under the radar, just have it done, and then you can go to camp and not have to worry. But
it's really interesting, like the way that we view the Cowboys overall. They're good. Like we shouldn't look at the Cowboys as trash. They're not. But they're just kind of good enough to be tantalizing. Just good enough that people are like, well, maybe the Cowboys will get it done this year. Now, some of that has to do with a lot of it has to do with what the players on the field are doing. You know, if you look at Dak's numbers in the game against Green Bay in the playoff, they're really good. And he wasn't the major problem in their getting blown out at home by Green Bay. But it's one of those things where it's like being in a club a little bit. And even though, was it delusional Cowboy fans? That's the Sean King line. Every year it's the same thing. Well, this will be the year that it happens for them and everything will come together. Jerry Jones is a really interesting figure in the history of the NFL. And I don't know if there's been anyone more instrumental over the last 40 years in the NFL than him. But it's a matter of, can you do both things at the same time? Can you up the valuation of your franchise while also trying to win? I would argue that Kansas City's doing a really good job of that. The winning part is important. Now, the market size thing is a big deal, too. Like, it being Dallas and Dallas having that branding that it's had for decades as America's team. Like, that's significant too.
When every couple of years they can do a documentary about their cheerleaders that does numbers.
Right. It shows you how interested people are in it. And with the news over the last 24 hours of who can invest in teams, like...
Yeah, that's another thing, too, about if they're opening up 10%, you talk about a gateway drug.
That's going to get
You talk about a gateway drug. If you're going to allow 10% of teams to be owned by private equity, and these become just line item investment portfolio pieces, chunks of NFL teams, okay, but once that number starts growing... And then you get activist investors, just like what's happening in the airline industry right now. Look what's going on with Southwest Airlines and activist investors who want to replace the entire board and entire executive suite. Private equity does not care about your history, doesn't care about your traditions.
Your brand.
Doesn't care about your employment.
Other than being able to sell it.
Oh, they care about the brand. But what private equity does is they fire all the human beings, retain the brand, squeeze every last dollar out of the brand, strip it down, and then sell it.
Sports Illustrated.
Newsweek, Chicago Tribune. I mean, you can pick out anything. And anything that private equity has touched and sucked the life out of.
And look, we're two guys that know. We are the face of bankruptcy.
We know bankruptcy. And also, before you text in and call me a hypocrite because of some, I don't know what all these mutual funds are invested in. I don't know. There might be investments that
in prisons and whatnot
that are they're touching some of these awful things and are part of adjacent to some of these private equity concerns. I don't exactly know. So it's really inescapable for all of us, but for the NFL to say sure, Alden Capital and Bain Capital, and you want to come on in and...
Oh, Batman, I've started a private equity fund.
I'm Batman!
You think Wayne Enterprises can deal with Bain Capital? You merely experience the dark. I was born in it.
Cubs quiz for me, apparently, next.
Bernstein and Holmes, your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on 670 The Score.
Cubs. So I ran across something that I thought that Dan would enjoy. It also is fun because it's fun with names from the past. And considering what you were doing before we started the show today, what you were looking up, I thought that this might be good for you.
Okay.
So first,
see, this setup means I'm going to suck.
No, I actually think you're going to do really well at it.
Ugh.
I wanted to bring it up for two reasons. One,
getting that school stomach feeling. I don't like it.
One, because this story is amazing, and two, because of this particular person's nickname. I wanted to make sure that I could say it. So, did you know that Rich Hill?
Mm-hmm.
Remember Rich Hill?
That's Dick Mountain.
Dick Mountain. Very good.
Yeah.
That he made an appearance for AAA Worcester at 44 years old.
Worcester.
So in celebration of that, this is from our guy, Andy Martinez.
Okay.
Who works over at Marquee, does a great job over there. Mm-hmm. Here in my hand, I have a box score of Rich Hill's debut. June 15th, 2005. Oh, how God. Many of the people on this roster can you name?
Rich Hill's debut, the Cubs roster in 05.
So Rich Hill, obviously, that's one.
Okay,
there's a lot of people in this box score.
So Derek Lee
very good
at first, right?
Yep. Right. Go around the diamond.
This is hard. I'm old and my brain's hurt.
You have two brains? Go around the diamond.
Hold on, I will.
Go around it.
Ryan Terrio.
The Riot was not playing second base.
Mike Fontenot?
No. I'll give you a hint. We always worried that this guy was just going to just fall apart because he took the game so seriously at second base. Every time you saw him at the plate, it felt like he was just going to he was going to turn the bat into sawdust.
Mark Bellhorn.
No.
Bill Miller.
Well, maybe you should move off of second base because that's not going well for
turn
you.
Turn the bat into sawdust.
I mean, every time you saw him, you felt like, man, this guy, he really takes his at-bats really hard. He's very serious. Nice guy. Good player.
I always thought that about Ted Lilly.
Ted Lilly did not play second
base. I know, but I remember asking Ted Lilly, do you like baseball?
All right, get up. Look, you got first base. Third base is a gimme.
That's Aramis.
Very good.
And then you had other guys. Because the old
shortstop is one of your favorite Cubs from that era.
One of my favorite Cubs?
You and Terry would reference him a lot.
Nomar?
No.
Because that was with the red bursting crotch dots.
Nope. Not in this game.
Oh,
my God.
Nephi Perez at shortstop.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he got replaced in the game.
Was Todd Hollinsworth in the game?
Yes, he was okay. In left field.
You can't turn your back on Hollins.
Can't. Nephi Perez got replaced in this game by pinch hitter Jerry Hairston.
Oh, no. This is like a black hole. I don't even know who the catchers were then.
Yes, you do. You know exactly who the catcher is. 2005. Catcher became infamous.
Barrett.
Very good. Now tell me who the starting pitcher is.
Well, you said it was Rich Hill.
No, that was his debut.
Oh, I don't know. It was one of those guys. It was Zambrano?
No.
Was Maddox still there?
Yes.
Maddox, okay.
Greg Maddox was your starting pitcher in that game. Other pitchers in that game.
That was Fat Maddox.
Todd Wellenmeyer.
Oh, God.
Jose Macias. Rich Hill. And that's it. Oh, wait. And Michael Wirtz.
W-U-E-R-T-Z.
Correct.
Yes.
You're right.
And so who's the...
And Ryan Dempster, for some reason.
I saw him when I was looking up the Reed Johnson catch today.
All right, let me give you the whole box thing. Score. Nephi Perez, Michael Wirtz, Jason Dubois, Ryan Dempster, Corey Patterson, Derek Lee, Mike Remlinger, Jerry Hairston, Jeremy Burnett, Aramis Ramirez, Todd Walker is who we were looking for at second base.
Todd Walker, yeah.
Todd Hollinsworth.
Tightly wound.
Yes, very much yes. So.
You're right.
Michael Barrett, Greg Maddox, Todd Wellenmeyer,
oh
Jose
God.
Macias, Rich Hill, Enrique Wilson. And there's Rich Hill.
What I remember about Rich Hill's, I think it was his rookie year, they had a national game on Fox during like a Saturday afternoon. And they had Rich Hill read the starting lineup, but he did it as Kip from Napoleon Dynamite.
Well, and this is news that crossed just a couple hours ago. He has been called up.
Yes.
He is going to pitch for the Red Sox at 44 years old.
They have seen enough at AAA.
He is now the oldest player in the majors. Rich Hill at 44.
And not a knuckleballer. Does anyone else remember Rich Hill doing that? And nobody and the broadcasters didn't understand what he was doing. They didn't realize like why is this guy Rich Hill speaking in this weird voice? But he was doing Kip from the brother from Napoleon Dynamite, and it was hysterical.
It's kind of amazing that he's gonna pitch tonight.
Yeah, well, hey, have curveball will travel, man. That is, just throw it every time.
And
well,
this will be his fourth stint with the Red Sox.
Yeah, and their problem is they need people to catch the ball. That was a struggle for them in their doubleheader yesterday with Toronto. Or that finishing the game that started with the guy, and then he's catching for the Red Sox now, but he was playing for Toronto. And then the second game, they couldn't catch the ball all game. So there. See, that was fun.
Yeah, but that I know it was a long ass time ago. It just that's a black hole for me. I Todd Walker. Ugh.
Todd Walker was an all right player, wasn't he?
I know he was, but I can't believe I had to go three deep into like Terrio and Fontenot to get to that guy.
You know, this list isn't as long as our guy Jesse Chavez, but it's this is crazy.
The teams he's played for?
Just the amount of teams and the him revisiting teams multiple times.
Todd Walker was a 783 OPS.
Mm-hmm.
I hit 107 homers in the bigs.
Yeah, he was a big get for them.
He had one great year for the Cubs and one, actually two really good years for the Cubs. OPS pluses of 109 and 112. Shout out to 112.
And good point, the 312. When you hear Mike Remlinger, everybody thinks of Jimmy Pearsall, who took like four stabs to get his name. That guy's name, Remington, Reniger, Rellington, Remlinger. It was a classic. It was like the time when Al McGuire was trying to say the name of Felton Spencer.
What, you call him Spencer Felton?
It was the middle of the game. And he's like, and he dunks the ball, and Al McGuire goes, Spencer Haywood!
Oh.
Spencer Felton! Felton Spencer! But he yelled each one with
DeAndre Ayton!
But it was three names with equal vigor and excitement.
DeAndre Jordan!
Next up, so a question that you got last night that when I thought about it, I thought, boy, if this guy's right, the Bears might be in a more precarious position than maybe we think.
Yeah. There could be some trouble.
Are you going to be fear-mongering here?
Right here in River City.
Uh-oh. Mongering is going on next.
Capital T that rhymes with P that stands for pool. That stands for pool.